Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Billy Bob Thornton was born and raised in small-town Arkansas, son of a psychic mom and a teacher-coach dad. Squirrel was on the menu when Granddad brought it home. Now that's all a long time ago, but it's not gone. Billy Bob Thornton worked and starved and dreamed his way to success in Hollywood. He's played the president and prison guard, astronaut, murderer, Davy Crockett, a kind of James Carville. And Arkansas is always there. Fans love him for his art, paparazzi for his wondrous eccentricity. He's laid it all out from start to finish in a new memoir. This hour on Point, Billy Bob Thornton. You can join the conversation from Sling Blade to Monster's Ball to Bad Santa to all the pretty horses. What does Billy Bob Thornton bring you? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from Culver City, California, is actor, director, Academy Award-winning writer Billy Bob Thornton. He's played everything from the worn prison guard in Monster's Ball to the hotshot wisecracking James Carville knockoff in Primary Colors to the cunning sleazeball mall Santa in Bad Santa. He wrote, directed, and starred in the remarkable Sling Blade, directed All the Pretty Horses. His next film he directs, scheduled to release early next year, it's Jane Mansfield's Car. Out this month, his new memoir, written with Kinky Friedman, The Billy Bob Tapes, A Cave Full of Ghosts. Chicago Sun-Times calls it one of the most readable, insightful, and entertaining celebrity autobiographies in recent memory. Billy Bob brings the crazy as he talks about his famous phobias and eccentricities, writes Richard Roper there. But he also details the long and hard road from Arkansas to the Academy Awards. Billy Bob Thornton in California, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. Angelina Jolie writes in the front that you're kind of an insomniac, and we got you up a little early. I hope it's all right.
Yeah, no problem. I'm used to it. But actually, the insomnia is not as bad these days.
That's good.
I think age helps you with that.
Because your soul settles down, or you just need the
sleep?
You
just get tired. you just get a little tireder.
Yeah. You got a lot of great stories in here. It's an unusual memoir in the way you put it together. Describe how these stories all got down on paper for us, if you would, Billy Bob Thornton.
Well, Kinky Friedman, who's an old friend of mine, he wanted to write a book with me. He said, why don't you and I do a book together? And Kinky's written a lot of books, so he knows that world. I don't really know it. Mm-hmm. And he said, why don't we write down some, you know, crazy stories about Texas, you know, some of our adventures in Texas.
His state, and, you're kind of a half-adopted state through Austin, Texas there.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Yeah, sort of my second home is Austin. Mm-hmm. I even know the street people in Austin, you know. It's just a place I like to go hang out. And
me too.
Plus, after high school, I moved to Texas, to Houston for a few years. And so I'm what they call a Texarkansan. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, that might be fun, you know. And within about 2 weeks, Kinky said, you know, instead of that, why don't I just arrange it all and why don't you just tell some funny and strange stories about growing up, and I'll give you a couple of chapters where you can gripe about how our culture is crumbling before our very eyes like you do all the time anyway. I said, all right. And, you know, because over the years, you know, every actor or musician or whoever it is always gets asked to write a book, you know, but they want one of these celebrity gossipy biographies, and I would never do that, so... Mm-hmm. I said, well, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And so the way we did it, we just set a microphone up over at my place. And over a period of months, we would invite different people over so there'd be kind of an audience. Because you can't just sit at a microphone and talk about yourself. That's, you know.
No, dry up in a hurry that way.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So... Kinky would invite friends of his that I either knew vaguely or didn't know at all. Because if you're talking to your own friends, it's going to be,
maybe they've heard the stories or don't want to hear you brag on about them or whatever.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. So we did it that way because in that way, it comes out more conversationally, you know. If you put the paper to the pen, then you're going to kind of overthink it maybe, you know. And this way, I was just going to ramble on. And then we, you know, obviously we edited it because, you know, rambling doesn't translate so well in a book with all the uhs and ahs.
Right.
So we ended up doing it that way. And I think it turned out okay. Like I said, knew nothing about the book world, and it's been an experience for me because I get to see how that part of the world lives, you know,
yeah.
when they're you know, making books and dealing with publishers and that kind of thing. And it was actually a really, really good experience with the book company. They were a little bit more mellow than the world I work in the movie business.
I can imagine. Well, you've talked a good one into being here, and it's got a lot of great stories in it. I was left thinking we may share a little history here. You talk about your, I think it's four greats, uncle, great, great, great uncle, who took a, shall we say, grievous wound in the Civil War somewhere down south. And I just happened to have a four greats uncle who was also down right around that area in Vicksburg, who came home wounded. And I couldn't help just wondering if they were shooting at each other from across the river. My Uncle Marcus and your uncle, was it also William, right?
William Langston, right?
William Langston.
And I actually named my oldest son after him because he could never have children himself. And I said, well, you know, I'll name my son after him that way, you know, by proxy.
That's very kind of you. Uncle William Langston, maybe looking down with a little gratitude for that. Those old stories, I mean, they lived in my family. It sounds like they lived in yours as well. And not just in stories. I mean, you write about growing up in a time when your grandfather would still go out with the .22 and bring home a squirrel or two for dinner.
Absolutely. Yeah. Whatever else he could find. In my early years, I was raised in this little town called Alpine, Arkansas, which was 110 people out in this valley. And so it was, you know, real live hillbilly life. And we did eat what he killed up until I was, you know, probably 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm. Shoot him through the eye, my dad used to always say. He was told to go out and shoot him through the eye so they didn't mess him up.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You didn't want a bunch of metal in the good part.
Right. And then you describe in this little town, your dad's a teacher and a coach, but your mom, a psychic, and not just in her own mind, but, you know, actually with sort of office hours and people coming in and reading magazines in the living room, waiting to go back to the blue room behind the bedroom and sit with your mom. What did she do for him?
Well, you know, my mom, from the time she was a little girl, you know, she just always saw these things. And, you know, when you talk about people who have ESP or whatever, I mean, even scientists are now proving that phenomenon. And people who normally wouldn't believe in that, they're starting to realize that there's something to it. And I can tell you there is, because she told me things, or still does, to this day, every now and then, that, I mean, they're only in my head. I mean, nobody could possibly know some of these things. And it's never the sort of thing that you might read in the newspaper horoscope or something like that. Mm-hmm. Just like, you'll meet a tall, handsome stranger. Mm. It's usually the obscure stuff that just boggles your mind. But, the thing about it is, if you're talking to a psychic and they're answering specific questions, that's usually not the real thing. I mean, because people with some type of psychic vibe or whatever, they see what they see. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. not like you can go in and say, hey, am I going to get the job at the radio station? Mm-hmm. And they look it up and go, oh, yeah, yeah, you're going to get it, but it's going to be in July or whatever. It doesn't work like that, you know.
Was it a burden to her or a wonderment, or how did she carry it, or does she?
Well, it's she's told me many times that it's a gift and a curse. There's actually a movie that Tom Epperson and I wrote called The Gift that starred Cate Blanchett,
yeah.
which is loosely based on my mother.
Mm-hmm. A blessing and a curse. You have some fun in this book. There's a picture of her, a photograph of her with Kevin Bacon.
Oh, yeah.
And you write in the caption, they later married.
Yeah.
Your mom and Kevin Bacon. I don't think so. But then everybody's related to Kevin Bacon, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's what they say. Well, what happened was Kevin was doing this last movie that I directed down in Georgia, playing my brother in the movie. Mm-hmm. And I just snapped a picture of my mom and Kevin when she came to visit the set. And people can be pretty... Well, I think in today's times with the social media and everything, mm-hmm. and plus with all the sort of, gossip rags and everything and reality TV and everything, people will just believe anything. Whoever says it first is right, you know.
Bark
and,
it out.
Yeah. Exactly. And a friend of my mom's said that these people, their neighbors down in I think around Dallas or somewhere, actually called my mom's friend and said, you're not going to believe this. Guess who married Kevin Bacon? They thought it was
your
real.
Mama.
Yeah. I think the caption of the picture in the book says, Kevin Bacon with my mom. My stepdad's an actor. How cool.
Right. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with actor, screenwriter, director, Arkansas boy gone to Hollywood, Billy Bob Thornton, about life and his new memoir, The Billy Bob Tapes, A Cave Full of Ghosts is the title. Wrote it with Kinky Friedman and joins us today from Culver City, California. In his big breakout, Billy Bob Thornton wrote, directed, and starred in Sling Blade, 1996, took away an Oscar for the script and reeled in a nomination for his acting playing the mentally impaired Carl Childers. In this scene, Carl, Billy Bob Thornton, tells a reporter about the night he killed his mother and her lover.
Well, I went in there in the house, and I hit Jesse Dixon upside the head with it, knocked him off my mother. I reckon that didn't quite satisfy me. So I hit him again with it in the neck with a sharp edge and just plumb near cut his head off. Killed him. My mother, she jumped up from there and started hollering, "What'd you kill Jesse for? What'd you kill Jesse for?" Well, come to find out, I don't reckon my mother minded what Jesse was doing to her. I reckon that made me madder than what Jesse'd made me. So I taken the Kaiser blade. Some folks call it a slang blade. I call it a Kaiser blade. And I hit my mother upside the head with it. Killed her.
Billy Bob Thornton in Sling Blade, 1996. Just an amazing performance, amazing film. What were you channeling right there, Billy Bob, in that character?
Well, the whole story is way too long to tell on the show here, but...
But there's a character there. There's somebody. It sounds like somebody you knew. That up in the up in the throat voice. And then mm-hmm. was it a person? Was it a thread of people that you'd known?
Yeah, it was like three different people put into one. Really, I used to work in a nursing home, and the voice partially came from an old guy in there. And, so there's some imagination in it and some, real life experience. And it was a character that I did in the theater for years in the 80s. And I used to do a one-man show, and I did all these different characters in it.
Mm-hmm.
And Carl was one of the characters I did in it. I did that opening monologue from the movie in the one-man mm-hmm. show.
Did you know, you came to Hollywood and it was not easy and it took a while. You made your way in there. You made it big here. But did you know early on that you would or would have to kind of ride your Arkansas cultural route to your personal success? Was it clear to you that's the thread you'd bring to the fabric out there?
Well, I wasn't that conscious of it, really. It's mm-hmm. just that I've always done what I know best, you know. I'll be the first guy to tell you if I'm wrong for a part. And I think one of the most important things about being an actor is knowing who you are. And it's just, you know, at the end of the day, your best work is going to be what you know. I'm not the kind of guy who... I mean, in other words, they shouldn't call me to direct the new Star Trek movie or something like that. I'm the wrong guy for that. But if it's something that's based on, you know, Southern literature, I mean, if they were doing, a movie based on an Erskine Caldwell book or John Faulkner, William Faulkner, that kind of thing, then I think, you know, I am the right guy for the job. And I think I just did it naturally. I didn't really, it wasn't like by design so much as it was, I attribute a lot of my success over the years to ignorance. You know, I just didn't know any better. I just did what I felt. And people used to say, well, when things were so hard, didn't you ever think about packing it up and coming home? But I never doubted that things would be okay at some point. I just didn't know any better. I thought that's just the way things work, you know. And I mean, it's like, you know, when like you were talking about earlier, when I was a kid, you know, we ate possum and raccoon and squirrels and everything. I'm a vegan now. Yeah. I wouldn't get near a possum, but at the time, that's what you know.
What's for supper?
Yeah, exactly. You don't question it. So I think it was the same way in my career. I just never questioned anything and just did what I felt.
We're glad you didn't go the homogenized way. Billy Bob Thornton is with us. His new memoir is The Billy Bob Tapes, A Cave Full of Ghosts. He joins us from Culver City, California. Billy Bob, lots of callers for you. Let's go to some Virgins, Vermont. Rick is calling. Rick, you're on with Billy Bob Thornton.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. I listen to your show every day, and I'm a first-time caller.
Great to have you.
Mr. Thornton, I just first off want to say that I'm a fantastic fan of yours. I love what you do, the characters you portray, from the individual in Sling Blade, which is my favorite movie of all time that you do, and how you came up with that character totally blows my mind, because it's such a character and it conveys so much, and how you related with that little boy in the same scenario that you were with. Awesome movie, and I'm just thrilled to death to be talking with you. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, thank you, Rick. I really appreciate that. And, you know, it's funny, you're calling from Vermont, and that's one of the places on my list. It's one of the few states I've never been to, and I've always been attracted to that place. And, you know, a lot of people think of the South as being the sort of rural place with all the characters and everything. But just from things that I've seen and read and everything, you guys got a lot of characters up there in Vermont, too. So
Plenty.
I've always wanted to get up that way. It just appeals to me. And I always tell my kids that one of these days, we're going to have Christmas in Vermont so we can, you know, be snowed in and be like one of those Budweiser commercials or whatever, with the horses and the carriage and everything.
I think in Vermont it's a craft beer, Billy. Billy
Bob. Oh, is that right?
I think so.
But I appreciate that, Rick. Thank you for saying that. And Sling Blade meant so much to me, for my career, but just also just to do something like that. And in these days and times, I don't even know if I brought that movie before a financier or a studio in the current times that I would ever get it made now.
It's changed that fast? I mean, it wasn't 100 years ago. It was 15, right? Something like that.
Yeah, it's been 17 years ago. And the thing is, though, our society has changed so much that they've practically wiped out the genre of adult dramas. I mean, that's the last thing they want to hear when you come in to pitch a story to people now. They want you to do, comic book movies and stuff like that. And then most of the comedies are, you know, sort of goofy things where a guy gets in trouble with a sheep in a hotel room in Mexico or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And it's very, very hard to make movies for adults these days. But one of the things that you know, guys like myself and guys around my age who grew up out here in the 80s and 90s making movies when you still could, one of the things that we need help with is the fact that the audience over, say, 40 mm-hmm. Are people who stay home and watch cable shows and everything and don't go to the theaters. So obviously the system is going to prey upon the people who do go to the movies, and that's teenagers mainly, or people in their 20s.
So if you want better movies, get out and watch some. Is that it?
Yeah, exactly.
You have to put up bucks for cartoon characters, as you say.
Yeah, exactly. So in other words, I think the movie-making machine doesn't care what they put out as long as it makes money. They're like an eating machine, so they just you know, they're going to put out whatever's popular. So if we can't get adults back out to the theaters, then they won't let us make those anymore. And that's why you see more and more, you see the good dramas on television, because that's the only place they'll let you make them anymore.
Let's get a call from Savannah, Georgia. Kevin. Kevin, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Billy Bob Thornton.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Billy Bob. Big fan of all your work. I wanted to know what it was like working with Lucas Black. You kind of gave him a start in Sling Blade, and then y'all were amazing in Friday Night Lights. That was a terrific book, and that's one of the best nonfictions I've ever seen turned into a movie. Wanted to know your thoughts on Lucas Black. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Kevin.
Right, thank you, Kevin. Thank you for bringing Lucas up, because he's a terrific kid. I call him a kid anyway.
Sling Blade and Friday Night Lights and You're All the Pretty Horses. I mean, you have worked with him
a lot. Yeah, absolutely. I always tell him that I'm kind of his movie father, because every few years we do another one. Lucas was 11 when we did Sling Blade, and then he was 16 when we did All the Pretty Horses, and then 21 when we did Friday Night Lights, so every 5 years. And
right,
then
right.
A few years ago, you know, when he was 26 or whatever, you know, he called me and he said, look, it's been 5 years, you know, you're going to have to put me in a movie.
What's up? Right.
And I didn't have anything at the time. But working with Lucas was amazing, because with Lucas, you get exactly who he is. And if you... He's the wrong guy if you want to turn him into something, and which is a really great commentary on the casting process, because the worst thing you can do when you're directing a movie is cast the wrong person because of their stature or whatever, mm-hmm. and then try to turn them into the part that it's supposed to be in the movie. With Lucas, you have to use him for exactly who he is, because he's as organic as anybody I ever met, and he does not change. So if you want him, he's the guy for the job. But if you know, and I've told people many times, even for myself, if you're doing a movie about Charles de Gaulle, don't call me, get a Frenchman. And with Lucas,
no departure.
That's right. Yeah. So if
when you need him, call him, and he'll be there.
That's right, and he'll be there. But he is really natural and a great human being and a terrific actor. He gives you as authentic a performance as anybody out there.
I don't have Lucas Black from Friday Night Lights, but we do have a little bit of you. Of course, 2004, this was Buzz Bissinger's book, small-town Texas high school football team makes a big run for the state championship. Billy Bob Thornton takes on the role there of the tough coach Gary Gaines. Here he is trying to rally his team at the half of their final game.
To me, being perfect is not about that scoreboard out there. It's not about winning. It's about you and your relationship to yourself and your family and your friends. Being perfect is about being able to look your friends in the eye and know that you didn't let them down because you told them the truth. And that truth is that you did everything that you could. There wasn't one more thing that you could have done. Can you live in that moment as best you can, with clear eyes and love in your heart, with joy in your heart? If you can do that, gentlemen, then you're perfect.
Now, I must say that is not exactly the speech I got at halftime in high school football, but it's Billy Bob Thornton from Friday Night Lights. Michelle in Aiken, South Carolina, you're on the air with Billy Bob Thornton.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
And Billy Bob, I want to tell you how much I thoroughly enjoy your diversity and your ability to play so many different roles, but I especially love your comedy, and I find it really hard to get laughing in a lot of movies, and it's your facial expressions and everything you say and the way you look and the talk, it's just absolutely great. I love it. And I wanted to know how much of that is improvisation or is it totally all script? And do you come up with things in the heat of the moment? And then the other question I just wanted to know, and you can take my call off the air, is from your mother, did you pick up any of the psychic abilities or how did that affect you?
Oh, great questions, both, Michelle. Thank you. Billy Bob, what about this, the script, the lines first? I mean, you've got some dyslexia. Does that figure in? Do you improvise? Do you memorize? How's it work?
Well, Michelle, thank you for the questions. Great questions. I tend to be an improvisational actor for the most part. There have been times when the script was so tight and had to be what it was, like with the Coen brothers, for instance, when I did The Man Who Wasn't There with the mm-hmm. Coen brothers. If you change something in a Coen brothers script, it may affect something later on because they write them very tightly. But other than that, I generally improvise quite a bit, and especially in the comedy stuff, because you'll find a moment in the middle of some scene that you just naturally go toward. You know, it's hard to be stiff in comedy. So if you just go learn your lines and go do it, it's usually not as funny because. Hmm. You know, humor is a looser thing than drama. So I think improvisation really helps it.
But when you've got a speech like the one we just heard, Billy Bob, from Friday Night Lights, now that's a piece of oration there in a way. Are you making that up, or are you given the script and you're mainly on it, or what's the combo?
That particular speech, mm-hmm. Pretty much everything I did in that movie was. Very close to the script. But that particular speech, I actually asked Pete Berg, the director, before we shot the scene, I said, I have a road that I'd like to go down in this speech, if you don't mind me trying it. And we did two takes of it, and it's about probably half improvisation and half from the script.
Well, it works. We'll hold that psychic question. We've got to take a short break right here, but we'll come right back to it, Michelle, I promise you. Billy Bob Thornton in Culver City, California. Please stand by there. Right here, the opening title from Monsters Ball 2001. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour with Billy Bob Thornton, actor, screenwriter, director, Arkansas boy, gone to Hollywood, about life and his new memoir, The Billy Bob Tapes. Here's a little bit from the 1998 Primary Colors. He plays the wisecracking, sort of a James Carville-like governor's campaign advisor, Richard Jemmons, uses his country wisdom to explain to the governor's wife, played by Emma Thompson, that something terrible is about to break in the news cycle.
Say you're out in the woods taking a and a wild boar comes charging at you. Now, do you pull your britches up and run? Or do you try to pull your britches up and grab the doves you just shot and then try to run all at the same time? Or do you just forget about the doves, pull your britches up and run because you ain't got time to aim and button your fly? And if you miss, well, you don't want to die with your hanging out. You see what I'm saying?
I think I speak for everyone in the room when I say no.
Right there, you get a little on the humor side. let me bring Inger in. We'll come back to Michelle's question. But Inger in Eagle, Michigan, you're on with Billy Bob Thornton, Inger.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Billy Bob, I'm so impressed with your creative process and all the work that you've been able to do. Just a couple weeks ago, I rented and watched The Gift. And got pretty scared, and I was wondering if, as a child, if you said that this was something that you based it loosely on and your mother. And
the gift being psychic power and Cate Blanchett playing that role, Inger.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And having her actually working with people in the home. I'm just curious, because the movie was pretty gruesome, were you scared as a kid? Were you afraid?
You describe a moment where you were, Billy Bob, if I read correctly, when somebody's husband came and didn't like the advice your mom had been handing out.
Yeah, we had threats and all kind of crazy stuff. Now, the movie you're speaking of, The Gift with Cate Blanchett, that movie was enhanced by Hollywood to a degree. In other words, Tom Epperson and I wrote a script that was much more a drama than it was a sort of supernatural thriller, you know, because those things sell. And so it was that part of the movie was amped up quite a bit. So when I say that movie is based on my mom, it was loosely based on her. Just the fact that we had, there were three sons and a mother and a father had died and everything. That's all reality. Mm-hmm. And the character that Giovanni Ribisi played in the movie, that's based on a real person and incident and everything, as well as the Keanu Reeves character.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have a lot to do with that movie beyond writing the script. You know, that was given over to the studio, and then they kind of make it into what they want. But and I think they did a fine job. But yes, that's, you know, that's sensationalized to a degree. But yeah, I was very nervous as a kid. We had a lot of threats. You know, in this one case, it was because the guy's wife was seeing my mom for advice because he was very abusive to her. And he was afraid of being sort of found out or whatever, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And he came over and gave us the business. And I was a little kid, you know, and that kind of stuff scares you.
Sure. And standing there in the house, not in the blue room, but in the house, bellowing and threatening your mom.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there were other incidents like that. But then, you know, a lot of the time it was normal around there. Or at least it was normal for us. Mm-hmm. You know, people, you know, who didn't live in that way might think it was what an odd upbringing. But, you know, as I said earlier, we didn't know any better. That was kind of normal to us.
Mm-hmm. What about Michelle's question earlier, whether you've got a little bit of your mom's psychic business going on? Is it related to, do you have some? Is it related to creativity, related to artistry?
Gosh, I couldn't tell you. I don't think, I mean, I'm like everybody else. I get these feelings sometimes, you know, that there's something and you call somebody that you, and then, you know, they say, oh, I can't believe you called. I just had a car accident. I'm at the emergency room. You know, that's mm-hmm. happened, but I think mm-hmm. it happens with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. There was a show on television recently about these experiments they're doing with people now. And there's something in our heads that, you know, there's some, I don't know anything about science. So, or much of anything, frankly, but especially science. And there's some type of particles in us or something that exists outside our bodies or something, and they mingle with others, you know, and they were doing these experiments on TV, and these were, you know, bona fide scientists, and they said, you know what, there's really, we're getting closer and closer to figuring this out. But yeah, I mean, they say that everybody's got it. It depends on if you're aware of it enough to trust it and go with it. And I don't know. I don't really know. In other words, mine's not developed mm-hmm. for sure. If I do have it, I have some other things I have to deal with, like the dyslexia and the OCD and all those things.
Well, I mean, you may be a little closer to it than some because you do let yourself run with your feelings sometimes, maybe more than some. I mean, you've got this wonderful introduction to the book, Billy Bob, The Billy Bob Tapes by Angelina Jolie. It's very loving, very loving. But she, at the same time, she's describing, you know, you got some wild stuff going on, you know, maybe insomnia back then, and, you know, doing your obsessive music at night, your mad mathematician business, she calls it, uh-huh. I guess, sort of a obsession with numbers. Maybe that's an OCD thing. I don't know. And a little agoraphobia, not liking being out in big spaces. If the insomnia has gotten better, I think I've read you saying the agoraphobia has gotten a little worse as you've gotten older. Is that right? Hello. Oh, we lost the line with Billy Bob Thornton right there. Let me get Quartzsite, Arizona. Wynn is calling. Wynn, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Tom and Billy Bob. So good to speak to you today.
Yeah.
You had just mentioned Primary Colors, and I had just watched it a few days ago. It's a great movie. I love it. And you had talked about how important good casting is, and I think that movie was just wonderfully cast. I'm sure.
Great James Carville, the kind of imitation there, or not imitation, but takeoff by Billy Bob. Mm-hmm.
It was just a wonderful part for him as well. I was wondering, Billy Bob, what is the project you are most proud to have been involved with? And contrarily, what is the one that you were sorry that you ever were part of?
Well, one thing, I can tell you this for sure, and thank you so much for the question. Sling Blade will always have a special place in my heart because that's what catapulted me into the public eye, even though I'd been an actor for years and years out in California. Mm-hmm. But that's always going to have a special place. But there are others that if I had to name...
Oh, we keep losing that line, and I'm sorry for it. You know what? I've got a little tape here from one that I really like. This is Monster's Ball. We'll see what Billy thinks when we get him back. But... here's a little bit from the critically acclaimed Monsters Ball. Halle Berry playing the recently widowed Letitia, who loses her son when he's hit by a car. She makes an unlikely connection with Billy Bob Thornton's character, prison guard Hank Grotowski, who also loses his son to suicide.
My son died, and, he died, and then, I never was a very good father. He's a good kid. I guess it's somehow it just, when I seen what you're going through there, it made me think about something or reminded me of something, I don't know. But, you know, when you feel like you can't breathe and you can't get out from inside yourself, you know, really.
Do you want to come inside?
Billy Bob Thornton there in Monsters Ball with Halle Berry, 2001, just another terrific film. Billy Bob, we lost you again there for a second. You're about to get maybe to the one that you regret. I don't suppose it's Monsters Ball. What about it?
Well, if I, to name my favorites, it would be Sling Blade and The Man Who Wasn't There, A Simple mm-hmm. Plan, Monsters Ball, and because of where I grew up and everything, I loved playing Davy Crockett. And Bad Santa has to go in there, too, just because it's so fun.
Over-the-top fun.
Yeah, exactly. It was just, for me to play a part like that was very satisfying. And that part became, that movie became iconic, which we didn't expect that. But one policy I've always made for myself is that I don't throw anybody under the bus. And if you notice in my book, if I mention anybody by name, it's only in a good way. And I, especially in these days and times with as I talk about in the book, the social network and everything, people seem to love to be cynical now and to run people down mm-hmm. and let's see who we can get next. And they love to see celebrities, drunk on the sidewalk or whatever it is, And so for that reason, I would, even if it's somebody that I abhor, I would never talk about anybody's movie. Do you know what I mean? In mm-hmm. other words, so I can't
down.
Say,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I would never say that I had a movie that I regretted doing. There are a couple, believe me.
assume as much.
But yeah, I've got a couple in there that aren't exactly always at the top of the resume.
Yeah,
and sometimes, the funny thing about making movies is mm-hmm. if when the audience watches a movie, and they can see it and say, "Wow, I bet they had an amazing time making that movie," when in fact, it may look like it on screen. and the experience might have been horrible. And the other way around sometimes. Mm-hmm. Maybe the movie didn't turn out so great, but you had an amazing time making it. And probably the best time I ever had making a movie was when we made this movie called Bandits, Bruce Willis and Cate Blanchett and myself.
Yeah.
And the locations on that movie were so stunning. And
where were you?
We shot the we started the movie, we were based initially in Portland, Oregon, mm-hmm. and we shot all over Oregon, and then we started down to back to L.A. And that the way the movie works out as these bank robbers, that was actually the way it happened in the movie. In other words, mm-hmm. they started up there and worked their way back to L.A. to Century mm-hmm. City, and we did it in order that way, and it was just an amazing experience because Cate and Bruce are both great friends of mine. And to be out there with good friends, making a fun movie with a guy like Barry Levinson, who's a terrific guy and a terrific director, it entertained us just making the movie. And mm-hmm. and I personally love watching that movie. I think it's a lot of fun. And it's not Citizen Kane, but golly, it sure was fun to make, and I enjoy it.
Hey, I just have to ask you about this because I just never heard of it, and then it's in the book and the interviews around you. You have a phobia about antique French furniture now. Is that true?
Well, it's not French necessarily, but it's you know, anytime you say anything publicly,
yeah, I know, then it comes back.
It turns into some bigger deal than it really is.
But it's just so peculiar sounding. So we got to ask you, what is that?
Well, what it really is that, you know, like that old stuff. Like, I'll put it this way: give me a modern place, or like like cowboy places, yeah. or like, let's say, Mexican or Spanish style. I'm cool with all that
stuff.
But
not fancy, heavy, gilt-carved, big old cushions.
That kind of stuff, right. You know, like big, heavy velvet drapes and those right. velvet cushion chairs with yeah. the gold ornate carved lions or gargoyles or yeah. whatever they are. That's not my bag. In other words, I don't want to spend the night in a castle.
Okay.
I'm not big on that kind of stuff.
We won't make you do it. John in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. You're on with Billy Bob Thornton. John, our time is short.
Thanks, Tom. I just wanted to ask Mr. Thornton, thank you for bringing your craft to the art of acting. Me and my wife thoroughly enjoy what you've done when it comes to your roles. And the question I had is that we enjoy that about movies. We enjoy relating to the characters, and we just cannot find that in the marketplace anymore. And actors are willing to take chances, such as the way that you do in your roles. And wanted to see your opinion on that as well, and see if there's, you know, a lack of that in movies today.
Hey, if I may, John, let me blow it up bigger with Billy Bob because our time is so short, but I think it's related. I mean, you've got a rant right here in the book where you say culture is crumbling before our eyes, people are apathetic about it, you know, laziness, cynicism, mediocrity, cruelty, not just the movies. You got to take on the biggest screen of all that's kind of despairing sometimes these days, Billy Bob Thornton.
That's true, and John, thank you very much for that question, and you sound like my kind of guy. I got to tell you, here's the main problem is this. John, sound like a fan. You sound like a true fan of movies, and you enjoy the magic and the mystery of movies. That's what we've lost. And myself, as an artist, I have to keep being a fan or I lose my own creativity. And the difference these days and before is like when we saw Paul Newman or Robert Redford or Jack Nicholson or whoever was on the screen, the only place we saw him was on the screen. We didn't see them scratching their rear end on YouTube walking down the street. So because there's too much access now, the magic of motion picture stars is kind of gone. And we don't have heroes the way we used to have heroes. And I could talk forever on this, but you are right. And for example, the last movie that I directed, which will be out in about 8 or 10 months or something, was shot in Atlanta, and it takes place in Alabama in 1969, and yet we couldn't get any American company to finance it. It was financed by Russians, who totally got it.
Wow.
So it's, yes, our movie business has sold us down the river, and hopefully it will come back. But we have to get people, like I said, over 35 or 40 to start going to the movie theater again to see adult dramas. Then they'll make them again.
Billy Bob Thornton's new memoir is The Billy Bob Tapes, A Cave Full of Ghosts. You joined us today from Culver City, California. Billy Bob, it was a lot of fun. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
We'll go out with I Made a Lover's Prayer, Gillian Welch, tune from the 2007 Thornton film, The Astronaut Farmer. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I mean.